Philanthrocapitalism: How Giving Can Save the World. Authors Matthew Bishop and Michael Green. Carnegie's Children. The problem of our age is the proper administration of wealth, that the ties of brotherhood may still bind together the rich and poor in harmonious relationships. So wrote Andrew Carnegie in his essay, Wealth, which first appeared in North American Review in 1889. Published today as the book, The Gospel of Wealth, it is practically the Holy Scripture for many of today's philanthrocapitalists. In the early 21st century, social and environmental challenges proliferate, and friction grows between the rich and the poor. The proper administration of wealth is again the problem of the age. Carnegie's approach to that problem is usually appealing to the successful entrepreneurs who are embracing philanthropy today, that the solutions is in their hands. Carnegie proposed a way for the rich to dispose of their surplus wealth, to give it away during their lives. The rich who had prospered as a result of their organizational and managerial talents should deploy these abilities, with the primary goal being to help those who will help themselves. The philanthropist Carnegie said, "You should assist, but rarely or never do all." That is music to the ears of today's philanthrocapitalists, who are determined to apply their business talents to their giving, convinced wealth creation offers the best route out of poverty, skeptical about the value of much traditional charity, and keen to provide the needy, as they like to put it, with a hand up, not a hand out. Carnegie saw philanthropy as an answer to the social problems created by a spurt in wealth creation, but he also regarded that boom in wealth as an unambiguous blessing. The rich had regarded their surplus wealth as property of the many, and themselves as trustees whose duty is to administer it for the common good. The rich, he argued, have it in their power during their lives to busy themselves in organizing benefactions from which the masses of their fellows will derive lasting advantage, and thus dignify their own lives. What drives giving? Religion, the family factor, vanity, seeking meaning, escape from taxes. The common elements. There appear to be two elements that dominate the new spirit of philanthrocapitalism: the belief that giving is a responsibility, and the belief that entrepreneurs, as problem solvers, can actually do something about making the world a better place. Among the super rich, there's a growing sense that philanthropy is not an option, but a responsibility of wealth. Philanthropy a la Bill Gates. Like many newly rich people, Gates began his philanthropy in an ad hoc manner, responding one at a time to the growing number of requests for help that arrived as word of his wealth spread. In 1994, the William H. Gates Foundation was born. 1997 saw Bill Gates start to take his giving to the next level, both by significantly increasing the amount he gave and by being more strategic in choosing what he supported. In 2006, it restructured its activities into three main areas: global health, global development, and inequalities in the United States. Insights from finance. One powerful insight that financiers can bring to philanthropy is a sophisticated understanding of leverage, which is essential if philanthrocapitalism is to live up to its promise. In philanthropy, leverage means increasing the returns on an investment by targeting money where it is disproportionate impact. To achieve leverage, philanthropists should not be competing with or substituting for government money. They should be trying to improve the way it is spent. Likewise, companies and NGOs will be only too happy to take a philanthropist's money, but they may be far less keen on more valuable things the philanthropist can offer, such as insight and advice. Investing in activities that will not have a payback for many years is one huge opportunity, such as neglected areas in science and other research. Another opportunity is to build up the social capital needed to generate jobs in poor countries, the payback on which has little appeal to politicians, being too diffuse compared with big announcements on big government-to-government aid or debt reductions. Creating market incentives for companies to do good is another opportunity that is only now being tapped. So too is investing in transforming activities that have traditionally been non-profit into for-profit businesses that can grow much faster and reach many more people. Social entrepreneurship. The two key aspects to being a social entrepreneur are having a social purpose and being entrepreneurial. According to the leading academic authority on the subject, Duke University's Greg Deese, a social entrepreneur, he says, plays the role of change agent in the social sector by adopting a mission to create social value, not just private value. relentlessly pursuing new opportunities to serve that mission, engaging in a continuous process of innovation, adaptation, and learning, acting boldly, without being limited by the resources at hand, and showing heightened accountability for the constituencies served and for the outcomes created. Social entrepreneurship is a slippery concept, despite the best efforts of scholars such as Deeds to define it. The role of profit is particularly controversial, with some hardliners saying that, by definition, social entrepreneurship cannot be for profit. Certainly in the early years of social entrepreneurship, the focus was on how to be as effective as a for-profit entrepreneur, whilst remaining fully within the nonprofit sector. Yet, according to Pierre Omidyar, founder of eBay, the success of eBay itself is a challenge to old black-and-white ways of thinking about the relationship between the profitable, the entrepreneurial, and the social. After all, eBay is a hugely profitable firm, built on promoting trust amongst a market-based community of users, many of whom have had their lives changed by becoming entrepreneurs selling to a vast global marketplace. Reflecting on this has changed how both Omidyar and Jeff Skoll, eBay's first employee, go about their philanthropy. Both now mix nonprofit and for-profit investing as part of their philanthropic mission to do good. As well as invoking innovation and change, the term social entrepreneur resonates with two core beliefs of many philanthrocapitalists. First, that the social sector badly needs a dose of business rigor. Second, that the traditional funders of the social sector, whether government or philanthropists, have failed to challenge the sector's often lackluster performance by getting nonprofits to hire top talent and insisting on management best practices. The Internet of Opportunities. For those who really want their philanthropy done new economy style, internet connectivity presents an abundance of opportunities and experiments for both the super rich and those with only a few dollars to give away. The low marginal costs of the internet mean that there is a potential to create many new opportunities for effective giving and for monitoring how the money is used. Will dreams come true? Well, we can dream. Yet philanthrocapitalism does have the potential to make the world a vastly better place, as the rich play a leading role in tackling some of the biggest challenges facing humanity today. The question is not, can philanthrocapitalism achieve its extraordinary potential? But will it? That will depend on many things, including, crucially, whether many of the wealthy people who have yet to get serious about philanthropy do so. Andrew Carnegie was right. Those who benefit the most from economic prosperity have a duty to use their money and talents to make the world a better place. But many of today's rich have yet to rise to the challenge.